Welcome to episode 20 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. I am your co-host, Anthony Tridelli, and here with me today, as usual, is Kent Huskins. Husky, how you doing?
Anthony, good, man. Yeah, doing well, thanks.
We've had a little bit of a break. It's been about a little over 2 weeks since we recorded our last show, and a lot has happened since then. We've had the All-Star break, a couple wins by the Ducks, and a loss. Some interesting trade rumors have been going on, so we'll discuss all of that. As always, you can find us on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place of the show for every team in Southern California and more. Will you believe in our teams? Do you believe? So, yeah, let's get started. Ken, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, we've been busy, but a lot of, I think everyone's had the crazy flu that's going around, and we've three of the four in our household had it. Everyone's back feeling good now, back in the rhythm, back at school and the coffee shop. So we're just kind of back in the routine. How about you guys over there?
I just want to clarify, when you say that the crazy flu, you just mean the flu, not the flu that's been going around, the coronavirus. That would be a little bit upsetting.
I don't know. I haven't really paid too much attention to that. I've just chosen to kind of ignore it.
But, yeah, wash your hands and wipe down your eating surfaces, I guess.
Exactly. Good kind of sanitary practices. That's funny, for the coffee shop, I actually had to take some food safety courses, and it's just like you become like have this ultimate permanent state of paranoia about washing your hands and sanitizing surfaces and cross contamination and all these things I like never even thought twice about, but now it's like 24/7 on my mind. It's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely think nothing more sketchy than walking into a restaurant or a eating establishment in California that has a B rating. You're just like, even though nothing's going to happen, you're just like, ooh, it's what am I walking into here?
Don't say that. We haven't had our health inspection. I know we're due like any day, so we're due for an inspection. So pressure's on, but we do everything by the book, so I'm sure we'll be fine.
Excellent. Actually, that reminds me of when I was in college, there was a Chinese place around the block from where our dorm was, and it was called OK Chinese Food. And we were like, huh, it's an interesting name for a Chinese place. And then we looked at the rating and it was a B rating. And I was like, maybe they got the health inspection before they opened and they just decided, let's not oversell the thing and just call it OK Chinese Food.
I love it. That's great.
But yeah, let's get into it. So way back when, Ducks versus Coyotes, that was, I believe, the first game back from the All-Star break, a victory for the Ducks. I think it was, if you go back before the All-Star break, I think that was their second win in three games or maybe three wins in a row. But definitely a really good performance. Adam Henrique gets two very, very easy goals, I'll say, but great work done by both of his teammates on those. Nice pass by Andre Kasha on one of them. And then Grant gets involved in another shorthanded goal, this time off the stick of Carter Rowney. How do you feel about the game?
Yeah, I guess that always seems like a tough matchup. And they're always kind of been a scrappy team and just always seems like it's always kind of like anywhere from a 2-1, 2-0, 3-1, 3-2, somewhere in that scope. And that's kind of the games they played there conventionally and the kind of identity they've built for themselves over the last two or three years. So just kind of hard working, keep it close and just try and kind of outwork and out execute with not, comparatively speaking, like a huge amount of talent. I think with the addition of Kessel over the summer, and then the big trade from Taylor Hall, you think they've kind of latched onto something. And while they're going to really take a run of this, and it just goes to show that the team chemistry and things that look good on paper sometimes take a little while to work out how you think. And it looks like they've kind of kind of slid a little bit in the standings and are now kind of flirting with that kind of 8-9 spot, which is kind of not what you'd expect after you kind of make an aggressive move like that to go out and get Taylor Hall. I think it made all the sense in the world there at the time. Like things were going well, and they'd been putting together a good season, and just seemed like a sprinkle of extra offense and a former MVP is just gonna put them over the top and in great position for the post All-Star break and kind of second half. But it hasn't really gelled yet, kind of in the same mode that the Kessel fit hasn't really. It's just such a different style than Pittsburgh and even most teams in the East. Like just kind of a lot more tight checking and just kind of a less run and gun, where those offensive guys really kind of tend to thrive. So, but yeah, I mean, backtracking, yeah, always a tough matchup for the Ducks. So it was great to see him come out and get a good start. And yeah, nice couple of goals. Obviously, the first one kind of off the boots or the lower shin region or something, whatever it hit Henrique. But when you go to the net, as they say, good things happen. And second one, great pass. And that's a nice little skill play by him there to be in close. And just as I think Hazy or Johnny were saying on the broadcast, how he just kind of, it wasn't really a shot as much as just putting the proper angle on your stick to kind of redirect it into the top corner. So that was a really nice play kind of at top speed. And then the third goal was the third goal the shorthanded?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another, those two, man, that's the chemistry is awesome, and they just kind of buzz around and they're always threatening. And yeah, they both been great all year, and to do it again was just awesome. And you see the firepower they're out against, and just kind of a harmless looking play and a bit of a miscue, the goalie D exchange. Coaches always hate that when you mess those up, believe me. So and just kind of go back, maybe, I don't know, power play case, and maybe a power play kind of letting the guard down a little too casual. Weren't expecting that much pressure that far down the ice when there wasn't really much going on, but just created something out of nothing. And then a great hustle play by Rowney away from the puck. I mean, you saw he was the one who backhanded it, kind of fluttered just to clear the zone down the ice. And then he skates right by two guys, including I saw him blow by, or I don't know, it was just like atrocious coverage on the rush. I'm like, who's number 91? This guy, what's he doing? And then I look up and it's Taylor Hall. I'm like, wow. He's one of those plays, I guess, where you just kind of let your guard down and just a case of getting outworked by a couple of guys who are just hungry on that particular play and have been feeling it this year. I've had some success at kind of encouraged taking those chances up the ice once in a while when they pay off like that. But I thought it was a good game. What did you see?
I feel the same way. I mean, it feels like Grant and Rowney are getting shorthanded chances every game they're playing. We're going to talk about one against the Kings as well in a little bit, but they didn't score on that one, but it was another example. But I just thought Kasha especially played really well in that game, and he's been playing well for the last few games. Of the players you really tend to notice on the ice, just doing, whether it's the little things, more spectacular things, Kasha's pretty much been involved the last few games. I thought it was a good win, especially kind of you talk about those games where maybe the Ducks are out of it, but they're trying to play spoiler a little early. And they definitely did that to the Coyotes, who are now only 3 points up in that last playoff spot with two games more played, already played against versus Chicago, who's in the ninth spot and 3 points down. So theoretically, that's even a tighter race than it actually appears on the standings. So good on the Ducks for for remaining competitive and getting the second, I mean, the unofficial second half of the season off to a good start. And then I think moving on to the Ducks and Lightning, unfortunately, a loss there, but a decent game, I think, all around. Raquel, that first goal he had was pretty, was just an absolute snipe, just turning around 360, rifles it into the goal, top corner. Like, I don't think it could have been any tucked any further into that upper corner than it was. I think Delzato had another great game, one of those where he was really up in the offense pretty frequently. Terry getting in front of the net, getting a couple of points, I think, in two straight games at that point. So some good signs there. Unfortunately, it was a little disappointing how the game ended up. I think Anthony Cirelli for the Lightning had a quite a game, really established himself in front of the Ducks net. Had a really nice move on Fowler. Gibson forced Gibson to make a good save. And then the other thing we've spoke about on a couple occasions this year, just the matchup, having to deal with the Manson and Lindholm when they're playing together, or one of them always having to match up against some of the league's best. In this case, it was Nikita Kucherov, who just scored an unbelievable goal in that game. So it was there were definitely some silver linings to take out of that loss of the Lightning, but I thought it was disappointing overall.
Yeah, I mean, that's another that's a quality opponent there. It's probably one of I think by the time the season ends, I wouldn't be surprised if they're back in first overall after a bit of a sluggish start and kind of I don't know, getting their psyche back in order after the first round there last year. But it seems like they've kind of all the talent they had there, you knew it was just kind of a matter of time. And I mean, the matchups, it's almost to play against a team like that. Matching up that's another, yeah, one of the guys who I would hate playing against, because yeah, they can just make you look bad and make it look easy. And that's not fun as a defenseman. And I think the more kind of times you have those matchups over the course of a game, especially if you're getting them all night, every game, you really have to have thick skin and the ability, because it's going to happen regardless of who you are, and just put up behind you and get back and keep competing and keep playing your game. So, but yeah, I mean, as a fan, I mean, that was a pretty incredible goal for sure. One of the nicer ones you're going to see from one of the top guys in the league. The Raquel goal, you saw the guys laughing after he scored because he totally whiffed off his first shot, and then you saw all the boys chuckling in the huddle after the goal. That was pretty funny. But it was a pretty pretty sick turnaround shot there with pretty much a 6'5" Norris Trophy. I don't know if he's won it yet, or he's definitely been a finalist, deservedly so. But one of the best defensemen in the game, this giant headman kind of draped all over you and spinning it and firing that shot and getting that much on it from that far out was really nice play for sure.
I think Hedman won the Norris two seasons, 2017-18. He won the Norris. So, yeah, you're right. very good defender.
Yeah. And I mean, there's kind of case in point on the other side. Like, I don't think he can defend that any better, but just guys are so good and they're gonna get their chances and bury some. So that was an unbelievable goal and for Raquel as well. So yeah, a tough one there. And yeah, I noticed that Cirelli too. I've heard the name a lot. I haven't seen too many Lightning games, but yeah, just the way he kind of gets in on the forecheck there, it looks like I can see what the buzz is about on him. And on that one forecheck, I think it was the Lightning's first goal, where he just got in there like he was shot out of a cannon and just kind of I always hated the guys that would kind of come in and almost fake like they were going to hit you, and then because you're almost kind of the defenseman, he used to and still guys do. You want to get a guy on your hip as you're going back for the puck and kind of almost welcome him to finish his check so you can chip the puck to your partner and have him kind of have a second or two to have some time to look up and make a play. But when someone kind of comes in like that, like you're going to be hit, and then just kind of jumps off you and in behind and takes the puck, that's not fun either. So any number of problems those lighting forwards can present, and that's why they did what they did last year, and that's why I think they're on their way to doing it again. I know Boston's up a couple points on them, but the way they've been rolling the last few weeks, I think it's just a matter of time before they overtake.
How dare you?
No,
it's, I think you're right. I think they are really they're coming on strong, and with the experience and the adversity they faced last year, I think they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs once that happens. And that Atlantic division, getting out of the second round of that Atlantic division is always it's been a war for the last three seasons between the battle against the Bruins two seasons ago, and then the Bruins kind of lucked out with Tampa losing in the first round, and they came up against Columbus, which was still a pretty good series. But I don't think there's going to be any way that the Bruins or Toronto can avoid the Lightning in the second round this year. I would be surprised to see them duck out in the first round two consecutive years. The other thing I noticed, and we'll talk about it a little more coming up for the recap of the Kings game, was the youngsters are starting to score again. Terry's getting some points in the Kings game. I think if there's one thing you want to carry forward that'll give you hope for the future of the Ducks, especially is a game like we had last, I think it was Saturday against the Kings, where you've got Jones scoring a goal on a beautiful pass from Sam Steele, a little behind the back pass on a play that got started by Kasha. And Jones really, once again, I know we spoke about it a few weeks ago with his stick work in front of the net. In this case, he kind of just moves his stick a little bit and is able to get almost, I mean, a very small surface area of his stick on the puck and lift it up past the Kings goaltender. So a great goal all around from the Ducks youngsters over there. And then Larson gets a goal as well. He's been struggling over the past few games, so it's good to see him get on the score sheet. But I think if you want to have hope in the youngsters, it's that they're starting to pick it up again in this second half.
Yeah, you're seeing their names definitely on the score sheet. And yeah, those guys you mentioned, Jones, Steele, and Terry as well. You're starting to see those guys pop up more and more. So definitely an encouraging sign. Yeah, that was a really nice play. And I think, again, you like to see that, even though the standings being what they are, kind of coming out. And I think everyone that's a big game in Southern California, regardless of standings, always is and always will be. And to see the guys come out and have such a strong start, and really, no one's mailing it in. You know, the fact that they're far down and the playoffs aren't looking like too great a possibility right now. But to see them come out and have a start like that and be ready to play and execute and compete, I think that was great and bodes well for sure. And a nice play on that goal all around. Yeah, it was a great pass by Steele, and just great pressure to kind of create a turnover on a backhand flip up the middle from your own half wall. I can just imagine what Coach McClellan had to say about that. But having those ones, it never fails. They always kind of tend to wind up in your net. Poor forward who did that, I'm sure didn't get too much of a warm reception there. But great hustle play, and hustle like that and pressure creates mistakes and turnovers like that, and get on the Ducks to capitalize. And then Derek Grant, once again, 11th of the year. It wasn't even shorthanded this time. It's like even more impressive that it was even strength.
Yeah.
But that was a sick, a really nice play. He's a big, strong guy, but to kind of hold off your check with one arm and redirect with a slap shot, an NHL defenseman slap shot, and redirected in and out with one hand. That was he made it look easy. That's definitely not an easy play. So it's, yeah, you love seeing continued success for him. I know we keep saying it, but what a great story, and come back after the injury and just pick up where he left off. So awesome stuff there.
Go on, and good on Fowler for that shot. I mean, I think it's another underrated part of those type of plays in general, is the ability of the defenseman to put it right where it needs to be at a high speed, so that it redirects into the goal like that off of Grant's stick. So another good play by another guy who's kind of had Grant's really having a breakout season, but Fowler's having definitely a comeback season from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's been strong all year, and yeah, that's a great play. Good point. Way to give props to the defenseman. I love it.
I feel like we're a defenseman heavy podcast here, where our guests have all been defensemen. You are a defenseman, but got to give love to the defenseman.
Yeah, absolutely. About time here. that was a great point by you. Great pass, kind of shot pass, shooting off the net, but being able to pick out that stick in traffic, there wasn't a lot of room to get that through, and it was real nice setup there, and just another, not on the score sheet, but just another great tilt by Delorier, and big guy from McDermott, was it, from LA? I know they've gone a couple other times this year, and it's just like I don't know if they're buddies or they have a history, but they're just going every game, and it's just kind of they're just going, they're just chucking, and it's awesome, and gets both teams going, kind of elevates the game, love what Delorier's brought to the table this whole year. Another guy we've talked about, another kind of the role player crew that has done a great job this year, been a real bright spot, and continues to be that. Those are always great, and love to see that in a rivalry game.
Talking about Grant specifically, Eric Stevens had a great article on him. I go so far as to call it heartwarming, about Grant's kind of journey through professional hockey and his breakout with the Ducks. I highly suggest reading it. It's on The Athletic. And he had this quote specifically about Grant's, not only his power play goals, but just his penalty kill goals, shorthanded, but also his presence on the penalty kill. The quote he has is, goals haven't been his only contribution since Grant returned to the lineup in Nashville. In that Nashville game, as one of Anaheim's top penalty killers, the Ducks have erased 13 of 14 shorthanded situations. That's 92.8%. In the 12 games he was sidelined, the Ducks killed off 22 of 30 for 73.3%, which is a huge difference considering it's a huge difference. With, you can tell what an impact Grant makes when he's in the lineup, and also how much of a kind of a communication and team effort thing the penalty kill is. Like, it might seem like it's one guy, but I'm sure that if Rowney was out of the lineup, it would kind of be a similar situation.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable stat. The goals, the shorthanded goals are one thing, but to see that kind of shift, that's no fluke. Absolutely. And I mean, you can see, and I think maybe partially they go hand in hand, where if you start having success, I know I've seen it before, where, you know, if you kind of have that in the back of your mind as a power player, well, this team can score shorthanded goals. Like, if that's part of the scouting report, where you kind of have that in the back of your mind, where you may be a little more reluctant to make some of those high risk, high reward plays that, like when you're going and 100% comfortable, you make without even thinking about. And when you make them like that, they usually usually kind of hit the reward side more than the risk. But when you kind of start second guessing things or have that in the back of your mind, it's amazing how that kind of caused that split second hesitation. So, but I mean, I could see it. He's good on, big guy, good stick, physical, can win battles, can skate, and factor in just his knack and the sense you developed this year and the instincts that, yeah, he's developed over the years to be able to jump in and kind of just have that inkling of when there might be some daylight to take a chance. And on the other side of that, so many times you've had the other part of the equation, Rowney, just being able to win that puck battle or get that clear and put it in a spot where he can get to it, or just create some havoc on the back check, the chemistry is phenomenal. It's been special to watch for sure.
Before we go any further, I've got some breaking news. This important PSA is brought to you by Manscaped.com. This is your pubic service announcement. After more than 18 months of research and development, the Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they have successfully created the greatest nut hair trimmer ever created. That's right, two created. It's that important. This new trimmer was just released only moments ago, and we are the first to confirm the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 manscaping trimmer is now available for purchase. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BELIEVE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV. And as always, your balls will thank you. All right. Now that that's over.
Incredible.
I read that and I was like, that's actually the tamest ad they've had me read this whole time. So
yeah.
Nice. I'll take it. But yeah, getting back to the game, season high saves by Ryan Miller, only gives up one goal. I think he had 46 saves or something like that, and the Kings really poured it on towards the end of the game. So a great job there by a wily veteran who is only getting better with age, I think.
Oh, so wily. I know. That was awesome. What a game by him. Just solid. Every time he's in there, he's great. And it's another stellar performance. And the one goal shouldn't have even been a goal. I mean, the ref messed up and blew the whistle early. I don't know how you can go back and overturn that like it never happened and call it a goal. Like, that makes no sense to me. That just blows my mind that they could call that a goal. There's no way. Saying it was a continuation of play, which I've never heard of. Maybe that's a new thing or something, but
it's come up a couple times, I think once or twice in the playoffs, but that's one of the more confusing rules that there is in the NHL, I think, in terms of review and stuff, because I think actually this goal, although I don't agree that the rule should exist, I think if you blew the whistle, the play's dead. I don't think there should be any sort of continuation, but that goal made it a little easier to understand how the rule, I guess, is enforced, because in a lot of games, or the games that I've seen it used, sometimes there's a scrum in front of the net and there's a puck shot on net, but it's trickling towards goal. No one really touches it, or the last person to touch it, the puck doesn't really stop, or it doesn't come to a full stop before the whistle is blown and eventually crosses the goal line. Relatively shortly after the whistle is blown. This one being a shot from the point and kind of trickling through Miller, it was more extended, where that you could tell that like the ref blew the whistle and the puck was still moving. And I mean, it was pretty bang bang again, but it was pretty clear that no one else touched it. By the letter of the law, that was a good goal, but it's a stupid rule. I mean, I think it's there to protect against, I mean, partially probably there to make sure that there are more goals scored, but it comes into play so rarely that it's like, just get rid of it. Like, if the ref loses sight of the puck, you lose the sight of the puck and the play's dead. It's like, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's never going to be perfect. And yeah, I mean, I know there's a time and a place and a usefulness for replaying all this stuff, but at some point, like, human error is part of sport, whether that's like obviously the players, but the referee too. Like it's a game with human error is a part of things. It's part of life. Like, it was a good goal for sure, but the ref blew the whistle like 2 seconds before the puck went in the net. And I guess if that is why the rule is in place, and yeah, I guess that probably would be a tailor-made incident why it would be. I guess I've just never heard of it. And I would think it would be used so rarely, but if there ever was a case and there is a rule like that, I guess it all kind of does make sense now. But
I'm trying to remember the playoff game that it was like a big factor in. And I think it was maybe it was an overtime, but it was within the last couple of years. But yeah, let's tackle a couple trade rumors. After that 3-1 win by the Ducks over the Kings, there are some trade rumors. Obviously, there's the one circling that the Ducks are going to be willing to take on someone's some overpaid veteran salary and contract in the next couple weeks in return for some young assets or some draft picks. David Backes comes to mind for the Bruins, who's been waived and has played in the AHL. I think he's making around $4 million a year. And finally, they went from scratching him to putting him down in the AHL and waiving him. And no, he hasn't been claimed. So I guess technically he's still Bruins property, but you wonder if the Ducks would be willing to take on David Backes and try to extract a draft pick or a draft pick and a young player from Boston. I'm trying to think of any other players with contracts that are that kind of burdensome that the Ducks that might be willing to trade for. None really come to mind just right off the bat, but I think Backes is the big one. What are your thoughts?
I definitely have no problem with that move, considering kind of where the Ducks are at as far as in a rebuild or whatever you want to call it, kind of trying to stock the cupboard or continue to stock the cupboard with youth and good young players. And I think it sounds great. And I played with David Backes in St. Louis, and great guy, and is definitely just kind of no knock against him as a player. He was a great player in St. Louis and a great leader and a great guy. And but it's just kind of a symptom of the modern NHL where the age of your old is getting younger and younger, and the premium shifted towards speed and more speed. And it's just kind of, it just happens. A lot of guys like that. One name that kind of comes to mind in that vein is Louis Erickson, but I'm not sure what he's making with Vancouver, but I see he's actually been back in the lineup and been scored a few goals up there. So you never know if that's kind of a ploy to get someone, plug them into the lineup and try and give them some success to showcase them a little bit and see what you can get as a return. Or I think that'd be a great play given where the Ducks are at to take on a veteran guy with some salary and for a team that's looking to free up some room to find like the final piece of the puzzle that they think is going to put them over the top and maybe has not so much a premium on young players, but the Ducks could kind of swoop in and get some picks. I think that would be a great move.
Yeah. The Louis Erickson contract, I just looked it up, is rough. That is his cap hit is $6 million for this season and the two following seasons after that. So that is certainly a contract that, the Canucks, I'm sure, would like to at least get part of off of their hands. I wonder even if the Ducks would take be willing to take him and his entire cap hit for the next 2+ seasons. But I wonder if they were able to negotiate to like a shared responsibility of what he's owed and the cap hit on this contract. If they would.
Yeah. You've seen that. You've seen that's another kind of common ingredient in those kind of deals. So I think, you never know. That'd be just a name popped into my head. So.
And the other trade, which I mean, this is going to kind of link to our three stars segment. Not really a trade, but a rumor coming out of Boston by, I believe, Joe McDonald, who's a Bruins reporter, was that the Bruins might trade or have been contacted about trading Charlie McAvoy, which to me is ridiculous. Like, I don't think that would happen, but I mean, if it does happen, I think the Ducks are a perfect kind of match for McAvoy because they need a right shot defenseman, a young guy who's going to kind of be really one of the top defenders in the game if he can continue his trajectory. And I, with a couple of years left on his contract, you're looking to get someone back who has years on his contract as well. The Ducks are looking, or the Bruins are looking for scoring. So I mean, the guy who I'm thinking of is Rickard Rakell. If I could see a Rickard Rakell, Charlie McAvoy trade happening, if indeed the Bruins were thinking about trading McAvoy, it makes sense to me. I don't know if the Ducks are willing to get rid of one of their more talented offensive players because it's really just, in their case, robbing Peter to pay Paul, I think is the saying. So I don't know. Well, what are your thoughts on that rumor?
I'd missed that rumor, so I was kind of reading it up on it a little bit over the last couple of hours. And I mean, I guess possibly the fact that I didn't know that McAvoy had not scored a goal this year, and apparently he's had some issues in his own end, but I mean, he's 22. Are you kidding me? Like, I can't see them. Like, you just don't trade a guy like that because he's having an off season. Even based on what he's done up till now, he's only 22. But the level he's played at before this season at such a young age, and I don't know. I think
it's a stretch for sure.
I don't know. I think that's maybe a little bit of creative writing, trying to come up with something to get to print. But I mean, maybe it's true. Maybe he has been at that tough of a year where you'd think of doing that. But I mean, what I've seen of him up to this point, I think that's pretty early to be giving up on a 22-year-old stud defenseman. I mean, that's not just something you come across every day. So, yeah. I don't know. I guess, yeah, I mean, if the Ducks could get him, it'd be amazing. But, yeah, to give up a guy like Rakell, I don't think that makes much sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, coming from a Bruins perspective, it is a far-fetched kind of rumor. I know the guy, McDonald, basically said he was texted by an NHL executive, and he said, the text said something like, don't be surprised if the Bruins trade McAvoy, which, I mean, that it's kind of mind-blowing, but having grown up watching the Bruins, it was also mind-blowing that they traded Thornton basically for peanuts, and that they traded Kessel basically for peanuts, and that they traded Sagan basically for peanuts. So it's certainly in the history of the Boston Bruins to make stupid trades like that.
Those aren't three encouraging cases there, but you'd hope that maybe they learned.
Yeah, definitely. And that brings us to our three stars. Three favorite or interesting fan interactions. I'm not going to say in my case it was favorite, but there are two negative ones and one positive one. But I mean, just touching on the Bruins one. So I wrote an article based on that report that I saw for Charlie McAvoy. basically saying, well, if this is a, if this rumor is, if there's any truth to this and the Ducks might want to pick him up, then I mentioned Raquel and Silverberg as potential, or not both of them together, but or either or as potential return that the Bruins might want because they're second line, first line caliber scorers. But I got, I mean, to be totally honest, the outlet that I write for, the Hockey Writers, I get a good amount of reviews, but when I wrote about the Bruins, this article was like absurd amount of page views. And I was like, man, that thing blew up. And I read the comments and it was all Bruins fans just going, why would the Bruins ever trade Charlie McAvoy? And I was like, and they're like, you're an idiot. I was just, all right, I'm just regurgitating this report that I saw from a real Bruins writer. And I'm trying to just theorize, but I was reading all these comments. These people are like, you're such a moron. I'm just like, ouch, the internet, it hurts.
That's crazy.
And there was a similar interaction with a Ducks fan last season where I had mentioned that the Ducks were maybe would not be in a position to make the playoffs for the next couple of years. This is probably this time last season, and this Ducks fan was like, I think you're underestimating the Ducks ability. They'll be in the playoffs next year for sure, and you're going to sound like an idiot. And like, I went back and saw that article the other day in that comment, and I was like, ooh, yes, I was right on that one. So give it the old rubbing in his face. Unfortunately, I deleted my Facebook, so I couldn't really do anything. And the funniest one, a positive one. So last year I volunteered for maybe like 6 months at a public or government access channel in Torrance. And I was a reporter, and one of the comments in one of the videos said that I was, in quotes, a daddy, like not like a father, but like, I don't know, a term for like good looking guy or something like that. And I was like, this is very awkward. I was like, I was probably some like 60-year-old grandma that watches the government access channel. But yeah, that's my three. How about yours?
Nice. Yeah, I was trying to brainstorm here a little bit. The one that jumped into my brain, there's always the funny ones that happen playing in the minors. I was playing in Portland. We were actually at home playing against Providence Bruins. And I think it was like unseasonably warm or something. Like it was early in the season, and it was the fall, but it was just kind of unseasonably warm, which was rare for Portland. But it was there was something like it was super dry out or something and hot, and like I don't know, I feel like the arena was super warm, it was kind of foggy and stuff, so there's all kinds of issues. But I always was a big like sweater, or like I sweat a lot when we were playing. So I'd kind of every once in a while, if I was playing a lot of minutes, obviously kind of in the minors, that tended to happen more so than the NHL, where you're kind of getting up to like 20, 25 minutes some nights in the AHL. But and sandwiched that with playing like 4 games in 5 nights with bus travel and all that kind of stuff. So but yeah, there was this one game in Portland, super hot. I think it was the our Sunday game, so the fourth game in 5 nights. And I was getting muscle cramps, and they were getting worse kind of throughout the game. And then we were getting pumped like 6-1 at home by Providence. And we had some awesome characters on that team. I think I mentioned it before, but like Trevor Gilley, Zdeněk Konopka, Shane O'Brien, Dustin Penner, P.A. Parenteau, just a ton of hilarious guys. But Konopka was always kind of the most vocal of anyone, and one of those guys that as your teammate, it was just kind of like your brother. Like, you just do anything for a teammate. One of those guys, just an awesome, phenomenal team guy. And we were pretty tight. We were buddies, and it was 6-1. I was cramping up so bad on the bench. I had to have guys basically help me off the ice at the end of the game, like to help me from the bench to get across the rink to the where the dressing rooms were. So as I was kind of being helped across the ice, some of the home fans were like, "Suck it up, Huskin. You're not hurt." And it was our home crowd. And like, we had an unbelievable team the year before, like made it to the conference finals and had a great like rapport with the community and everything. And just getting chirped by these like two guys up there, it was so like demoralizing too, as a pro athlete, having to get muscle cramps and get like, I couldn't, my legs totally seized up. So these guys were kind of dragging me across the ice. And it just gets chirped by the fans. And then Konopka turns around and just starts going back at them and asking them to meet him in the parking lot after the game. These are our home fans. And so, like, that's kind of how it was there. It was just a character with the fans and character on the team. It was just a great city and always entertaining. But that was kind of the big one that jumped out as far as interactions with fans, the ones I remember. And stuff with the NHL was always kind of a little more tame, a little more professional. Never any of the players challenging some of the fans to a fight in the parking lot after the game. But I didn't have three, but that was the one that definitely jumped out for sure.
Yeah, that was a good one. I enjoyed that story, but I think we're going to wrap it up for this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Deli Tweets. That's DelliTweets. You can find Ken on Instagram at at Husk_Verna. That's HUSK_VERNA. I think that'll do it. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Anthony. See you, bye.
Yep, bye. So I could worship from above, where I climbed down to be set free. She took me in again as a beast.